My name is Chris Jordan, and welcome to another one of my thought-provoking progressive podcast series called Who's Out There? A belief system is what grounds our idealistic view of self-actualization through the course of this life, not only within our own internal battles, but within those we fight around us. Talking about religion with unlike-minded people is normally a cue for conflict. Literally standing up for what you believe in is a rite of passage. But are you defending or are you accepting? Why does there have to be an ultimatum drawn when sharing our spiritual practices? I myself am an Orthodox Christian, currently in the thick of really foundating my belief system. And while my journey continues, I want to continue to connect with the world and its people around me. So as this series grows, I will explore just exactly who's out there from varied spiritual baselines, asking the difficult questions and challenging these contexts in faith. And I hope you join and enjoy this experience with me. In this episode, I have an interesting sit down with practicing Satanist and representative of the South African Pagan Rights Alliance, Tristan Kapp, for a sit down between myself as a Christian and himself as a Satanist to see whether there is any common ground. Enjoy. The faith is quite shallow. The basis of what that faith is, I mean, if it's only based on reaction.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree. I 100% agree. And that is why I vociferously differ from the idea of using reactional responses and just leaving it at that.
Yeah.
There's a difference between, I mean, it's been used in art all, you know, throughout the centuries, using different art forms and music, metal and music was used to provoke individuals in conveying certain messages to force individuals to confront their social realities.
Yeah.
And I think that is where Satanism is basically philosophy and art and also individualistic expression combined. Mm. But you can't just shock people. There needs to be a sort of substance that follows that shock value, a conversation. Mm. And basically garnering an individual's attention through that shock should be the ideal. And having a conversation with them and having them confront their conceptualizations of reality is, I believe, a more, you know...
Do you, in your interactions, I think most of us struggle with that because of, like you say, just kind of like...
Preconceptions.
I think just social ethos, where you would take scriptures from your... Is it called the Satanistic Bible?
There is a Satanic Bible.
Yeah. Do you read that?
No, I don't think that Satanism in per se is necessarily bound to a certain religious text. And there are, unfortunately, Satanists who have a modicum of elitism to them that believe, you know, the begin all and end all of Satanism starts with Anton LaVey's writings, who was, you know, unequivocally the pioneer of Satanism in the late 60s.
I understand, again, I get this, so that we don't veer off too much from this particular
topic.
Point, yeah. With the Satanic Bible, and again, because now you're basically, what I'm understanding is that you're a liberated practicing Satanist, right? That's kind of moved away from that. You see that as archaic in a way.
Yes, definitely, okay. Definitely.
I'm not going to read the Satanic Bible. It's just one of those things that, as a Christian...
I get it. Yeah. I completely get it.
But I don't mind knowing what's in it, in terms of like, so what does it kind of start, middle, and end with by this guy that obviously put it together?
If you look at the Satanic Bible per se, it was merely Anton LaVey was basically using certain cinematography or certain artistic and philosophical anecdotes and combining them and basically using these philosophies to encourage individuality and self-expression in terms of promoting values such as not denying oneself, you know, not forgetting past orthodoxies and the idea of what you have been taught and recognizing where you come from instead of just throwing out the baby with the bathwater, per se. Mm. And the idea of basically... promoting self-preservation, but again, in a critical sense, if you approach the Satanic Bible, it's if you look at where or on what it is based, it's mainly based on earlier occult literature, for example, such as that of Aleister Crowley, who was formative to the construct of what we understand today as the occult, and Eliphas Levi, who was a 14th century French occultist, who developed certain sigils and also drew the idea of Baphomet, which people perceive as Satan today. But again, these anecdotes and these literature philosophies, as well as drama and psychology, forcing one towards liberation in an autistic sense, was sort of the underpinning of LaVey's philosophy of Satanism. And while that was valid, and it was merely, again, a reactionary narrative to the present time, where Christian evangelism was on the rise, there was the satanic panic in the United States, where Satanists were accused of committing crimes and sacrificing babies and, you know, searching for virgins, which was merely a product of a cultural enigma which promoted a widespread fear of certain
things
which were different.
They were doing it, just happened to be Satanists.
No, not at all. It was a sort of post-hoc argument where you basically correlate things and shove them together, where in essence these two constructs have nothing to do with each other whatsoever.
Okay.
As I've said, you know, and used examples earlier, with crimes committed by individuals who are Christian, especially in South Africa, there is a tendency to believe that they are automatically in cahoots with the devil or with Satan to make the crime more palatable. Because I don't think that people in society are wired necessarily because of past indoctrination to believe that Christians, in a general sense, are capable of crime and criminality.
Okay, but no, okay, here's my thing. Okay, with that particular point. Is it the public that is deeming them or labeling them as Christians that were persuaded or whatever it is, empowered or possessed by the devil or demonic spirit, that's why it is, or is it their own claims? For me, that sounds like a bit of a cop-out. If I am a bit of a Christian, well, then I'm basically a serial killer because I'm being brought to... and that is obviously individual choice or whatever it may be.
No, I agree.
So is it either or both?
So it's both. It's both public claims and public perceptions.
Okay.
And there are no evidence for it whatsoever.
To keep the conversation quite segmented in the terms of what human beings are capable of, the deception on every single side.
Yes.
Right? That leads me to our next thing. Prophetic claims are also something that we have to question. So in other words, are prophets... Do we have satanic prophets? Do we have satanic prophecies?
No, I think, again, that would be a Christian rhetoric. But again, I think also Christian theology misunderstands the entire concept or construct of prophetic or prophets, in terms of the fact that in ancient society, in terms, if you look at the ancient Near East, prophets were individuals who challenged society in order to, you know, be more ethical. And if you look at certain prophets such as Isaiah or Ezekiel, Jonah, the individuals, they were forced to send, they were basically sent out to communities in order to get the communities back to their roots. And get, you know, these individuals were usually found in basically doing whatever they want, raping and pillaging and not caring for one another and neglecting the idea of community. And these individuals basically had doom and gloom rhetoric in which of and which basically buys into the Old Testament tradition of if you do not obey the Yahweh, he will, you know, it would result in you getting curses, your family will not thrive, your crops will die, and your cattle will also suffer.
Okay.
And essentially that would be...
I get that. Okay. So, okay, when we say that prophecies, and it's, I mean, let's say from the biblical sense, okay, because, I mean, I'm asking you because you went to go study this as well. So if we look at the prophecies and we say that the majority have actually come to pass, I mean, you can look at that both Old and parts of the New Testament, again, because you're an academic on this, right? How do you not convince yourself? I'm saying you're an academic, so you would come across this and say, I'm going to evaluate and analyze this, whatever it is, and I'm going to do so. How does that process work? So in other words, with prophecies, right, how do you explain that? when it moves into the New Testament, was that part of your studies?
Absolutely, okay. Yes.
So then how does that... Okay, so back to my question then. How do the prophecies not make sense to you? The ones that were in the Bible, are in the Bible, mm-hmm. and happened to happen?
So what prophecies are we talking about? Are we talking about... because there are different prophecies
sure.
in the Bible. There are prophecies of... destruction, there are prophecies of salvation, there are prophecies of a messianic nature, of a salvific nature.
Which ones offend you the most?
I wouldn't say it offend me, but I think the idea that...
Well, it make you feel uncomfortable enough to
basically,
say...
Basically, I think, well, all of them, but mostly the idea that a lot of people believe that there's a dispensation connected between the Old Testament and the New Testament in the fact that the New Testament was a preparation for the messianic, you know, Christ. Yeah. And whereas essentially, theologically, there are a lot of critical scholars who are religious especially, who basically acknowledge the historical consensus that there are no prophecies in the Old Testament that is fulfilled by Jesus Christ in the New Testament whatsoever because of the fact
and
that...
And in the real world, nothing of that...
Nothing of that anything. Whatsoever because of the fact that the literature and the anecdotes or the context of the Bible was written 2,000-3,000 years ago by a lot of men, by a bunch of men in the desert in the ancient Near East okay. who had no understanding of the 21st century spirit of the times or zeitgeist whatsoever. And therefore, the realities are vastly different. But from an academic perspective, I find the anecdotes or the biblical texts fascinating and interesting because they resemble a primordial history of where religion developed. And my mindset about the Bible is similar to the Quran or the Vedic texts or basically any religious conjecture is the fact that they resemble a cultural history that we cannot deviate from. But... because of the fact that some of these rhetoric and these ideas have been transliterated into society, they have been causing more harm than good.
I get that. Let's break away from Christianity. Do you have commentary on other religious practices?
Absolutely.
Tell me what you think about them.
Well, I believe that, for example, even Islam to me is problematic due to the fact that in a lot of countries they still practice Sharia law, which encourages child law or child marriages and polygamy and the beating of wives. I mean, even the Prophet Muhammad was married to, I think, his second wife who was 6 years old and he was 50 years old. And that's something critically acknowledged by all academic scholars of Islam and religion. So that to me is...
Do you think, so you're saying that that's not the way to behave?
Absolutely. And I mean, even if you look at the Quran, and just as much contradictions are in the Quran as there are in the Bible. In one surah, the Quran would acknowledge that the Christians, the Jews, and the Muslims are all of one faith, whereas later in the Quran, there would be anecdotes of violence and... a sort of call to behead them as a sort of
but again, that's
call to be jihad. However, what I did acknowledge and a difference, and that's where I believe would be my own personal bias, is the fact of how I believe that Muslims are more aware of this problem and are less, I'd say, disingenuous in acknowledging the problems within their own theology, with individuals abusing it.
Okay.
But the most prominent individuals with the loudest voices, YouTube Muslims, have essentially dictated the narrative. And that is unfortunately the way that it is with all terms of religious philosophies,
what
especially
about the Hindus and the...
Well, the Hindus and the Buddhists are responsible for asceticism in the terms of the fact of how even the idea of what was it called, the tantric philosophy, was essentially patriarchal and was a way for men to subdue women into having sex with them, which is also problematic. And I mean, even the most prominent individual, Mohandas Gandhi, which a lot of people laud as a figure of humanity and humanitarianism, slept naked with his cousins to prove that he was that he had self-control, which I think is perverted. And Another example would be one of these New Age, or not New Age, but also one of these, I wouldn't say a televangelist, but more on the Hindu side would be Deepak Chopra, who basically has a lot of airy-fairy narratives, basically just having no substance to these narratives whatsoever, and just making money out of...
I can agree with that.
You know, selling people pseudoscience, as much as Joel Osteen and Joyce Meyer and, and you know, Joseph Prince and all of these Christian evangelists.
Look, Kenneth Copeland. I agree. You, as a believer of something, it's at first nice... It's enticing, it's attractive, whatever it is. I'm going to use Joyce Meyer as an example because I can't stand her. One, it's a big fat lecture. It's always, it's this, again, propagation of, if I'm not better than you, then what type of Christian are you? But you have to, you must feel terrible in comparison to anything or everything that she might say. I'm gay. Whenever I hear someone consistently... in my, obviously, in the Christian faith, consistently talk about garbage like that. Do you understand?
I completely agree.
Of course, why would I listen more?
Yeah.
Do you understand?
No, I completely agree.
And I'm not cultivating a new form of Christianity because that, again, is, it's, I mean, that's blasphemous.
We didn't say that whatsoever because of the fact that there is...
I'm saying just in my experience.
Oh, I get you.
Because again, and I'm not catering because I know what I lived through. And everyone knows that I keep... repeat this on an ongoing basis. I was not coerced into being a certain way.
Absolutely.
Or brought down by a demonic, whatever it is. I'm quite understanding that.
Absolutely.
You know. And, but the thing is, again... So that's what I'm saying. When human beings come in and they make terrible reflection on, like you said, this very super-powered stardom factor of talking rubbish where it's customized. It still is customized religion at the end of the day. It's customized towards them. And they do whatever works for them to get more money and more, I say, awareness, whatever it is. Again, they idolizing themselves. They're building self-idolization, which again, in any way, is a sin. When I speak to theologians, right, who have a broad understanding and a very, like I say, strong understanding of many different religious practices, you're so empowered by information, right, and knowledge, right, that even you yourself should take the most educated choices moving forward, right? And a lot of your studies don't have to do with contradictions, do they? I mean, I'm saying to you...
They definitely do. I mean, if you look at, for example, I watched a scholar the other day on TikTok who's Dr. Dan McLellan, absolutely phenomenal individual, also a believer. Well, he's a part of the Church of the Latter-day Saints. And I saw a Christian pastor's reaction to his videos and a lot of the factual corrections that he basically uses to explain certain misrepresentations of the biblical texts. Mm. And a lot of theologians and scholars of the Bible and religion, such as what I am, can 100% agree that these things are not surprises. Mm. They are not surprises. They are basic, you know, the very basics of the Bible if you study the Bible in a superficial way.
Yeah.
So they are in no shape or form, I would say a novel thing or something that is new. It's something that you can open the Bible and see for yourself if you read it attentively enough. but I think, you know, going back to the concept of misrepresenting religion, I don't think that there is something such as a pure religion, because that would be a contradiction in terms.
For sure.
Because there's no such thing as a pure human, because if you focus on that rhetoric, you get Zionism and you get fascism, and which are both, you know, showcasing to be extremely dangerous to individuals. And then you've also got jihad in a more Islamic sense. So... Christian fundamentalism, or what they call Christofascism, today is definitely an issue which is causing a lot of more issues than, for example, a bunch of people...
Is the same old issues.
It's the same old issues that have been thriving for the best part of 2,000 years. The idea of one group of people being more special and chosen by a deity is by default a matter of a modicum of fascism. You can see that in the Old Testament. In Germany, that was the result, or that was the premise of what would of the Holocaust. Yeah. The idea that there are certain individuals who are more pure, who are more superior than others, and you still get such individuals in South Africa especially, who see themselves as the Boer Israelite, or the I can't remember what they, but they have this novel biblical text which is purely anecdotes from the Old Testament and the New Testament conflated, and usage of Hebrew words, and a sort of messianic Judaism theology, which is extremely damaging, and they have constantly basically had racist anecdotes and anti-LGBTQ anecdotes, and promoting violence and toxic masculinity and all of these problematic issues.
When you look at it from your point of view, as again, and with your religious practice, do you see them being accountable?
Not at all.
Not. Are they not going to at some point pay for what they're doing? Do you not see that?
I don't think that there is this idea of eternal torment and punishment. Otherwise, why do we have a legal system to begin with?
What about here? Yeah.
So that would be superfluous if there would be a concept of eternal torture. And I think just as much as there are revolting people, I think that such a system imposed by a god promoting love instead of hate, and social cohesion instead of hatred or mutual hatred amongst each other, is somewhat disingenuous,
again,
and would impose a modicum or an idea of a celestial dictator.
Okay, what if they actually did what this god told them to? I'm saying, you said that it's assumed to be represented as love, acceptance, whatever. What if they actually did that? Which is another completely multiverse, whatever
it
is.
I
get that.
Yeah.
What if they actually did that? Would the conversation...
The conversation would be 100% different because of the fact that, as a scholar of the Bible and religion, I recognize the role that the historical Jesus played, and how he was misrepresented by early church theology.
Yes.
And I believe, this is a quite controversial statement, I might admit, but my individualism as a Satanist is not different from what Jesus did in the Bible.
He did propagate individualism.
Yes, he basically said that the kingdom of God is inside all of us. He basically went into the temples and threw over tables and whipped people due to the fact that they basically transformed the temple, which was supposed to be a place of worship, into a marketplace. When the prostitute was supposed to be stoned, he looked all of the people in the eye and told them, let he without sin cast the first stone.
Sure.
But again, this concept of non-judgmentality, and this concept of love thy neighbor as thyself, taken in context, should be recognized in context, in not discounting the fact that you can't just have unconditional forgiveness. As I've seen with regard to a fact that a guy, I got a lot of flack for the fact that I exposed a guy on social media not too long ago for raping his 7-year-old daughter, and is now walking free. And a lot of the social... a lot of social media and individuals in the Afrikaans community supported this guy with funds, with food, with everything, because of the fact that he was a prominent individual in society. He was an ex-heavyweight boxer. Stoffel, I can't remember his full name, Jacobus someone, who was a heavyweight champion. Him and his wife basically was responsible for the sexual violation and abuse of their 7-year-old daughter, and they had evaded the police back in the 90s for about 5-6 years, and eventually the police caught up to them, and they just both had a prison sentence of 5 years. Yet this guy tied his daughter to to the door of their bathroom, and he exposed his 7-year-old daughter to adult films. Basically, when they were guests, the guests would take turns with his daughter, and he would abuse her frequently, even sexually abusing her himself.
Yeah, I do remember the story.
Yeah, and Christoffel Willemse was his name.
Yeah,
and essentially, now he resurfaced on social media and wanted to start church planting, and Christians flocked to him as if he was a new Isaiah or a descendant of Mark, Matthew, or Luke, who wrote the Gospels.
Did
you
he claim that?
No, not at all. But I mean, it's just to showcase a sort of comparatism.
So what did you say?
To how this guy was perceived and how he was treated as if he had the authority of these individuals. And that was problematic. Another example would be Oscar Pistorius.
No, what did you say? So what was your response?
So my response would be that this guy committed one of the most, in my consideration, the most unforgivable crime ever. Because, I mean, there could be a justification for stealing bread. There could be a justification for murder. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm not saying that it's approvable. I'm just saying that there could be mitigating circumstances in these issues. But when it comes to sexual abuse of a woman, of a child, that is one hard line that I believe is punishable to the highest degree, and I believe that that person should be stripped of their human rights, because that is what Satanism believes, in the sense of that the freedoms of others should be respected. If you willingly and willfully encroach upon the freedoms of another, you lose your own. And I believe that should be how a legal system should be dictated, due to the fact that if you willingly go out of your way to date rape a woman or rape a child of 7 years old, your own flesh and blood, you are essentially the most messed up person in all of humanity. I would even go as far as to say that it would be, on an individualistic sense, worse than what Hitler did to the Jews. Mm. And that in and of itself is heinous.
That's a big statement. That's why it's difficult to be like, to not actually say that sin is sin.
But you see, the idea of sin doesn't even exist in the Bible. It's another church, it's another product of Christian theology. The word does exist, but in the ancient Greek, the word for sin is hamartia, and in the Hebrew, it's chata or chatat, and essentially it just refers to missing the mark, which is a term derivative of Greek archery. So it doesn't refer to moral undoing or the fact that you are depraved, is a narrative that was created by the Catholic Church in creating
culpa. I'm going to say that, for example, let's just say, I mean, so I'm Greek, I understand that a lot of our diction, our vocab, have one word can have many, many different meanings used in different contexts,
yes.
Right? So if we're going to get semantics, like, that might be the direct translation for it, but in different contexts it will mean more then. My point is that if you want to justify it, sin doesn't have to be a construct of what comes from Christianity. It's an action. Human beings are not capable of moderation. They really are.
I disagree.
No. We just saw there. Like, it's either, it seems to be very easy to go one way or another. Now, there's people that are, they can't understand how forgiving definitively works. So they'll be like, cool, let's just give him the benefit of the doubt because I am a Christian or whatever I am, and I'm going to now forgive him. I'm going to even praise whatever little efforts that he does that make him look like a human being.
Yes.
I get that. But again, or they can be the complete opposites, like you say. Like every gay person will go to hell. That's what I'm saying to you. Right?
So are you referring to the fact that people should be wary of absolutes?
Yeah. Well,
absolute mindsets.
Yeah, because it's very easy. It's a lot less work, and we can always label it under the concept of faith. Because
yes,
it becomes blinder and blinder and blinder the less I do, and the less I want to know, or the less I know, and I can just say, oh, well, it's this. You understand?
Yeah, instead. I get you. But so that would be moral relativism, and something which would be something that I agree with, in the sense of that certain acts are more heinous than others. In the fact that whereas Christianity, or in monotheism as a general construct, has the opposite in their moral absolutism. There is absolute right and there is absolute wrong. There is absolute sin and there is absolute altruism and good deeds. And that is, you know, what a lot of Christian apologists in terms of the fact criticize non-believers with, in the sense that we are, in a sense, morally relative. And in the fact that we acknowledge that there are mitigating circumstances. But what my viewpoint about these things is merely of how people use their religion to advocate and to propagate the wrong things.
Sure, but that we know to be clearly true, and it'll constantly be there till whatever end of time actually does.
But what I have found in South Africa is that I've found more tolerance and understanding from individuals who are not, I would say, from a Afrikaans Christian background.
Sure.
Due to the fact that I've seen, for example, charity organizations created by, what would you call it, called the Gift to the Givers, who help all individuals, and it's not an organization that is necessarily restricted to certain religious constructs or forcing a religious text under the arms, which I think is something that a lot of Christians need to realize. Obviously, there are select groups, and I have a lot of individuals, such as my girlfriend, who is also a Christian, whom I love dearly and has, you know, encouraged me with the inspiration that there is the idea of people having a second chance. The only idea that I am averse to is the fact of this elitism, this idea of how this elitistic concept where Christians cater to their own individuals and propagate the support of one individual, and this is an ideology that still persists and is still kept alive and is influencing and affecting.
Until the last person that embodies it dies.
Correct.
Follow us on Instagram @ChrisJordanMedia or go to my landing page, ChrisJordanMedia.net.